Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Brian McCauley from the Media Management and Transformation Center down here at the Jönköping International Business School in Jönköping. Jönköping twice, in the city of DreamHack in Sweden. Stephanie Orm from Emmanuel College can't be here right now because she's in America, and my guest today is in Australia. So time-wise, I have to present Michael Trotter, who is from the Queensland University of Technology and is completing his PhD in health, psychology, and performance in esports. So welcome, Michael, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thanks very much. Yeah, so I'm currently about 2 weeks away from completing my PhD here at QUT. I'm through my final seminar now, and we're just about to submit the thesis off to the external examiners, which is really, really exciting.
So is this the good part or the bad part?
I don't know. I don't know where the good parts and the bad parts are in a PhD anymore. It all just blends together.
It's nearly over. It's nearly over.
Yeah, that's right. And that's exciting. I had someone say to me once that getting a PhD is a bit like getting a driver's license. Once you've got it, you can take your career wherever you want. So,
absolutely. Okay, so we'll start off with the first question. What is your definition of esports?
So I just define esports probably slightly more broadly than some have in the past. So I consider esports to be competition of video gaming. So, and that can stretch everything from, you know, people who have just managed to get onto the ladder rankings in League of Legends, right through to the people who are, you know, sitting at the Dota TI and playing for those, you know, $1 million prize pools that are always being mentioned and referenced. And I think that it's important to distinguish that competitive element does stretch all the way from the very beginning and the very lowest level of competition right up to the top, because it means that we can get an understanding, particularly from a performance perspective. It allows us to start to look into how expertise develops over the entire expertise kind of range.
Okay, so look. This is the last 2 weeks of your PhD. So, I mean, how many more times are you going to have to talk about it? Maybe a couple. But so what's the title of your PhD, first of all?
So the title of the PhD is The Health and Psychological Determinants of Success in Esports. So what we're looking at is we're trying to understand what role, health and psychology, broadly speaking, play in terms of esports performance. But we also were taking a really exploratory approach to also set some kind of benchmarks. So we wanted to just, generally speaking, get a bit of a picture as to what the health and psychology of esports athletes looks like at various different levels of expertise.
And this is like, there's three main studies. It's a three paper approach to a thesis, right?
Yeah,
that's correct. Okay. So what was the first study that you did to kickstart this whole thing?
Yeah, so the first one we did was we were looking at the health and physical activity levels of e-athletes. So we were looking at how frequently they were exercising, how much they smoke and drank alcohol, what they perceived their general health to be, and what their BMI was. So we compared that against their in-game rank and against an international database the general public's BMI across the whole globe. So what we wanted to understand was do e-athletes look and act similarly or differently from the general public in terms of their weight and their exercise and their drinking and smoking behaviors?
So this is rank. Which games, first of all, did you look at?
So we looked at Dota 2, League of Legends, Overwatch, Rocket League, and Counter-Strike GO.
Okay. Counter-Strike, CSGO, yeah.
CSGO, yeah, sorry.
And when you're talking about athletes, you mean anyone based on a rank just playing the game casually or people who compete?
Well, it depends on what you I suppose it depends how you determine compete. So in order to be able to get a ranking in any of these games, you have to have completed, either ranked a character or an account up to a certain level, and then you have to compete in at least 10 kind of placement matches before you can get onto the online ranking. So that was kind of when we sat down and thought to ourselves, okay, so what's what is an e-athlete? How do you define an e-athlete? That's kind of where we came to. So basically for us, for myself and my supervisors, the discussion that we had was, you know, an e-athlete is anyone who has completed those placement matches. And once you're competing in those online ladder systems, we consider that to be esports. Now, obviously, those online ladders are at the absolute kind of, I suppose, lowest end of the spectrum of competition when you compare them against the international competitions that we see that have huge prize pools and viewership. And many of these esports athletes who are competing in those lower ranks, you know, especially the ones that are in like the bronze tiers at the very bottom of this of the ladders, you know, they're not going to have any viewerships, and there's sure not any money involved.
So this could include me, playing CSGO in matchmaking. I could be part of this study, and you say he's 40, he's overweight, he's not as healthy as he should be, and that's why he's crap.
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I mean, you still have masters divisions in traditional sport. Prior to coming into in academia, I did a lot of work on the snowfields, and there was masters divisions for some of the older skiers, and some of those guys would fit that description. So guys and girls would fit that description perfectly. So
well, I did a poll in my online class yesterday. I was teaching SMART objectives: is a specific, measurable, achievable, realistically, and timely. And as a kind of joke, I put Brian could be a professional CS:GO player in 1 year. And half the class said yes, right? And I said, oh, thanks, guys. But no, that is not realistic at all. But I do appreciate the good karma you're giving me. So overall, this study, right? So what would you say is the key finding? What was the main outcome here?
Well, we were kind of shocked, actually, a little bit, in the sense that when we, particularly in and around when we're looking at the players' BMI, what we saw was that esports athletes, in comparison with global population data, were up to 10% more likely to fall into a healthy weight range compared to the general population, which we were really surprised at. Now, obviously, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are healthy, so to say, but it did indicate to us that potentially they were healthier than what you might expect the stereotype of a gamer to be. So that was quite interesting. On the flip side to that, they were also significantly more likely to be classed as obese category 3. So at the absolute top end of...
So there's kind of big range. And
yeah. However, the percentages there were much smaller. So it was only a couple of percent more so than the general populace. So whereas within that healthy weight range, it was much, much more. And when we looked at some of the areas, specific areas where a lot of our participants came from, so for example, in Australia, there was no difference between the e-athlete population and that obese category 3, but there was a much higher, much greater proportion of our participants fell into the healthy weight range. So I think that what that indicated to us initially was that, okay, so they're not quite as fat as what we expected them to be, according to the stereotype. And then further to that, the players or the athletes who were a higher rank and fell into that top 10% range of players were significantly more physically active than the bottom 70%. And the same was for their BMI as well. So as rank increased, we saw that the top level player, the top level e-athletes had significantly lower BMI than lower level players. And so I suppose the picture that we started to get was that those e-athletes who are healthier are performing better.
Let's see, that's, for me as a marketing guy, I love that, because it means that you could create messaging around that to be good at the game, it's better to be healthier and take more exercise. And we've seen a lot of research around this, of course, the 6-minute break, take the walk. But, yeah. I think that's really awesome. It's a really positive thing for esports to actually sort of say, hey, look, we can dispel the stereotypes and we can encourage people to be healthier if they want to be better at games. Now, the second study, it was psychological factors. What was that one about?
Yeah, so this is where we started to move away from kind of physical activity and BMI, and we were starting to look at kind of psychological factors. So the specific ones we were really interested in were social support, self-regulation, and we wanted to look at their psychological skill use.
And let's break that down now, because, you know, not everyone's a psychologist and I need to sort of know. So let's first of all, what's social support in this study?
Okay, so when we were talking about social support, we were specifically looking at received support. So the questions that were in the questionnaire were all in and around asking about specific occasions where e-athletes had received some form of support, whether it be kind of informational support, things like, you know, getting better at the game or getting advice either about in-game, you know, things that were happening during the game or knowledge about the game, all of those kind of things. Emotional support or esteem support, you know, emotional support being talking to people about feelings. Esteem support is very much about, you know, self-worth. And finally, we had tangible support, which is where, you know, people are doing things on behalf of the athlete in order to kind of help them with their daily life. That was really fascinating, actually. We found that overall social support was reported really, you know, at really low levels by e-athletes across all of the ranks, which is really
interesting. That's something that needs to change then, isn't it? Obviously, that's something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe part of it is because we were looking at adults for both study one and two, you know, we're really talking to people who were and have been playing and competing in these games prior to the existence of high school esports programs. You know, and, you know, we talk about study three in terms of positive youth development, maybe in a minute, but, you know, it's in that kind of grassroots sport where we see a lot of that personal development happen for young people. And so we also know things like, you know, self-regulation, which is, you know, not necessarily emotional regulation, but it's the process in which we go by learning new skills. You know, we set goals, we monitor those goals, and we reflect on whether they worked before setting new goals. Those kind of skills are predominantly learned, you know, in environments where you have coaches and teachers and people who help you to achieve that. You know, self-regulation.
Well, it's a PhD, isn't it? A PhD is the ultimate self-regulation. Off you go. Yeah. Here's some advice, and off you go. That's something that I think I found easier as in late 30s, 40s, learning CSGO, I could set those goals. But because I approached it with a diary as part of a research thing, I found the diary helped me. And I wonder if I'd just been playing just normally, would I have been able to do that? It would have been much more difficult to actually set those goals. And all I wanted was gold Nova 4 so I could make Mark Campbell admit I'm a skilled player. And I've done that now. Now I'm absolutely happy just being not a silver because I've done that. So let's talk about the psychological skills. What are psychological skills in this study?
So psychological skills are a variety of different skills. They're things like that include things like imagery and goal setting, you know, reflective skills. They're skills that we tend to see, you know, traditional athletes use in terms of, you know, when they're competing and in their training. So we looked at a variety of different skills. I'll actually need to pull these up because there are too many of them for me to be able to remember off the top of my head.
Look, while you're doing that, so when I'm playing pool, it's always good to visualize the ball going in the pocket. That's sort of one. And I've tried a trick, not a trick, but sometimes playing CSGO on the pistol rounds to start off, I've kind of told my teammates, just say headshot, headshot, headshot to yourself. And, you know, and then I've had a couple people go, oh my God, that worked. Just repeating headshots as you're running around with your pistol out, because you automatically are doing it. So that'd be sort of psychological skills in that aspect, visualization, repeating mantras.
Yeah, you know. Imagery definitely is one of the psychological skills. So, you know, imagining yourself doing the skill, obviously before doing it is definitely a way to learn.
It's hard though. It's difficult to do. And you've got a dog.
I have a cat that is
it's a cat.
Big cat. Sorry, that door does not close.
That's fine. So, more cats, please, is what my students have told me when I'm doing my online classes. I literally get messages going, more cats, please.
There may be a second one floating around somewhere. So, yeah. So, okay, so in terms of the psychological skills that we looked at, so we looked at goal setting, imagery, relaxation, activation, self-talk, emotional control, automaticity, and negative thinking were the ones that we looked at. Yeah, so kind of each one of those in and of itself, some of them are fairly self-explanatory. Obviously, goal setting is goal setting. Imagery is imagining, you know, and being able to visualize the task that you're going to do beforehand. Relaxation is your ability to be able to calm your emotions. Self-talk is self-talk. So I don't know. Do you want me to go through all of them?
Or? No. But I mean, like the emotional regulation one is, I find very interesting, because I think I don't get too worked up playing a game at my age, but I when people tilt and they're playing a game, and it's like, I wonder, is like when you're a teenager and everything associated with being a teenager, does it make it much harder to self-regulate in a game? I mean, you're, you know, all school, yeah. Social media, all that pressure. I mean, and then the hormones and the stage of life. I mean, did you find a big difference with sort of maybe the age range within your study on that sort of stuff? Or what was the findings around that?
Well, in terms of emotional control, interestingly, actually, one of the things that we did find was that when we compared our participants against traditional athletes, so studies that had used the same measure to evaluate traditional athletes, we found that e-athletes actually outscored traditional athletes on emotional control, which was surprising, because they e-athletes tended to be significantly lower on almost all of the other psychological skills, but with emotional control they scored significantly higher, which we were really surprised about. And considering that esports has had a bit of a reputation for online toxicity, that's something we were surprised about, because like you were saying, you know, younger people, you have to learn to control your emotions, and that's part of, I suppose, what we learn in traditional sports. So with a lack of coaches and those kind of developmental environments, it was surprising to us that emotional control was reported.
But if you play sport, right, you're playing rugby or soccer, normally, right? And I'll take rugby, because football / soccer you can kind of play on the street a bit more, but rugby terms, you're playing a game every week, you're maybe training two nights a week, so you're looking at 5 hours of actual being engaged in it, whereas in esports you could do that 5 hours on a Saturday easily, 10 hours on a Sunday, and a couple hours every night. So maybe the idea that you spend more time in the environment allows you to develop those skills. Am I barking up the wrong tree here, or is that a decent theory?
Maybe. I think a lot of it has probably also to do with the influence of the coach and those who are kind of teaching you. There's obviously not much research out there on esports coaching as of yet, but anecdotally from the esports team that we have here at QUT, and from having spoken to coaches along the way, coaches often have quite a short stints with esports teams, and often the esports teams that have coaches are often those that are much more professional. We don't necessarily see that happening quite as much at a grassroots level yet. So and I think that's kind of an area, a really interesting area for future researchers to get a better understanding of what these kind of developmental practices look like.
I mean, I have a lot of coaches out here I work with or talk to, because it's Sweden, and the coaching scene is quite, I'd say, a little bit more advanced than Australia or Ireland. It seems to be, those roots have mean that you've got a lot of people coming through coaching, and so maybe it's all a little bit based on the culture and the culture of coaching, that different countries are at different levels now.
Yeah, definitely. And Sweden is one of the countries that definitely leads the way. Up until just recently, I believe that there was a program that students could take up at Strömbäck up north. Sorry, I'm trying to restrain my cat here from jumping up into the camera every 5 seconds.
No, leave him alone. The cats are allowed. More cats, please. I'm with my students on this.
Okay. So they had a program over there you could take for an entire year to learn CSGO and to attempt to become a professionally, Counter-Strike professional athlete, which is super interesting. And that's something that, had been established years and years and years before anything even remotely close to that had popped up here. So I think the fact that Sweden has kind of had accepted esports Well, you know, we've got a podcast, I'm engaged with that, esports
is sport. Oh, we lost the Dota International, we got to see us go major.
Yeah, of course. But I think in terms of, there's probably two different things going on there. I think on one hand, there's the, is esports a sport from a legal perspective? And there's, does esports have a more supportive community because it is generally more accepted by the populace? Are probably two slightly different things.
Yeah, well, we won't get into that because that's 17 PhDs, 100 research papers, and 1,000 podcasts. So this study too, I mean, well, how would you describe the main outcomes of this? What's the key takeaway?
Well, similarly to study one, what we found was is e-athletes who had higher levels of social support were better self-regulators and more effectively used their psychological skills, outperformed their lower ranked companions. And I thought that in and of itself is quite interesting. And it's important because in the process of developing these kind of grassroots coaching programs in the future, it's going to be something that should be really considered. You know, specifically teaching our young athletes, you know, how to set, you know, effectively set goals and how to reflect on those goals and how to generate that kind of self-regulatory cycle where you are constantly learning from your errors and mistakes. I think your diary study example from before, I think, is a really good example of the kind of behaviors that we should be encouraging in grassroots esports.
I think a common diary entry I have is, I shouldn't have played that game. It was 11 o'clock at night. I'm 40. I worked all day. You know, after two rounds, I suddenly went, whoom. And I was like, I don't want to be playing this. I can't hit a barn door, you know, sort of thing. I mean, that's awesome. So look, this all leads into the third study. I can see the progress here for the third study of your PhD, which is an observational study of the impact of youth participation in a high school esports tournament. What's that about? What did you do, first of all? What was the study? How did you do it?
Yeah, cool. So we got in touch with a local high school esports competition that was being run here in Queensland, so across the entire state, that had a number of participating schools. And within those schools, they had organized teams that were training as an extracurricular program as part of their school week. And they would take part in competitions weekly that ultimately led to an in-person competition that was run out of QT down here in Brisbane. And so we measured them on their self-regulatory skills, on their growth mindset, on their physical activity at the beginning of the year's esports competitions, and then again at a six-month part point, which is about two-thirds of the way through the entire competition, to assess to see whether or not any of this kind of development had occurred. And we also looked at positive youth development. And so that was really interesting. We kind of touched base occasionally with the teams, but it was very much observational. So there was no interventions run or anything like that. We were simply watching to see what the outcome would be. That was really great, and it was really interesting. What we found was that we found no significant differences, which, you know, on one hand, as a scientist, is probably usually the last thing that you want to hear when you run your data, because you think, oh no, I've got
no results. Is a result that's what people forget. It's like we're testing stuff, and if that's the result, it's the result. Students hear their thesis and go, oh, you know, we didn't find what we thought. That's brilliant. You found something. You proved something.
Yeah, and I think that when you take the interesting thing was because there was, so we looked at both the youth e-athletes who were competing in the competition, and we had age match control participants as well, which are of approximately the same number. So we were comparing these e-athletes against the other kids from their school, basically to see, you know, whether there was any differences at all between the development of these students throughout the program. And we didn't find any results. And at first I thought, oh, okay, well, I suppose that's not great, because it shows that maybe the esports competition isn't doing anything. But I think when you take the results of the third study kind of in, you know, you compare it against studies one and two, where there were significant differences between the general population and the athletes that were part of these other studies, I suppose what you begin to see is that maybe these esports programs that are in schools are actually enabling these youth to develop alongside their peers who are involved in traditional sport. We found that 20% of those who were competing in the esports program were not taking part in a traditional sporting program. And that's a really important finding, because what it basically suggests is that esports is a new avenue in which we can start engaging youth in a competitive environment, in these kind of coaching environments like we spoke before, where they get access to learning about how to self-regulate and how to learn, you know, how to learn, basically. How can they learn how to learn through an esports context? How can they learn about, you know, psychological skills, which you learn.
It's brilliant. That's exactly why. Yeah, that's fantastic, because that's what we need. Because all the skills you're talking about, and they add the teamwork, the strategic, the problem solving, you know, that's a difficult thing for a lot of us as academics and researchers and in industry to convince people of. And of course, then there's the ones that are doing esports and traditional sports. Well, that's just extra goodness. It's like playing two different sports, like training for a marathon. Do your running, but do your swimming or your yoga as well. And it's all good. I mean, I love that. That's a practical outcome that can be a benefit to society and to esports.
Yeah. And I think it helps with the fears of parents as well, because, you know, I think one of the fears you hear a lot about is, you know, the really late gaming nights and the really long stints on the computer. And by having these training programs in schools, we're kind of bringing these kids out of their rooms. You know, they're learning that they need to go to bed within a reasonable hour so that they can, you know, function properly in their training. You know, like, they're learning all of these other kind of health behaviors. Many of these schools, anecdotically speaking, when we're talking to the teachers, were saying that they were including physical activity as part of the training programs, because they recognize that health is such an important factor, not just for their performance, but, you know, for their development overall, because of the fact that esports is so sedentary in nature. So I think that that's fantastic. And I think that it really shows that, you know, youth development for these esports athletes who aren't involved in sport, you know, this is a new place where it can occur.
Of course. So this is there are the three studies, and you've done your introduction and you've done the conclusion and linked all these as part of your final process. And by the time anyone sees or hears this, you will be Dr. Michael Trotter.
Hopefully.
Because recording before we release. So no, I'm going to say it's for certain now. You'll be Dr. Michael Trotter when you're looking at this again. So, you know, I'll be the first person to say it technically, because it'll be true awesome. When this comes out.
You can coin the time.
But, you know, enjoy it for a while. Then it's only really useful for renting apartments. That's what I always found. It's like, that's the key advantage. You put doctor on your application, and the landlord says it's a doctor, they'll behave. And then it's me.
What a shock they get.
No, but like, that's the most tangible advantage apart from careers and stuff. Nobody ever calls you doctor. So, which is fine. I mean, I just say, call me Brian to students and everyone. It's Mr. Brian I don't like, because that's weird. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the esports diploma that you're developing, which sounds very interesting. And so you're doing the first of a kind in Australia. So what is this?
Yeah, so the QUT College, so QUT has a program that offers qualifications that sit below a bachelor level, and it's for school students who might be seeking to potentially have an alternate entry into other areas. So the esports diploma is going to feed into business, IT and creative industries, so for students who might want to pursue their careers in those different directions. And so we've taken units from various different bachelor's degrees from that first year and are teaching those units alongside esports specific units. So the idea is that students who are really interested in getting involved in the esports industry but aren't really sure where to start and want to get a qualification that can give them a background into understanding, you know, what is the esports industry, how does the ecosystem work, what are the contemporary issues in esports, you know, all of these different subjects, they can come to QUT to get that diploma, and then when they get to the end of that, they've got uh, They've got a qualification that actually has esports in the title, which hopefully will give them a competitive advantage in the.
It was a $400 certificate for doing an online quiz.
It's a proper course, and it's going to be taught by people who have actually worked in the esports industry, which is great. So it means
Need that for the contemporary issues aspect. I mean, it's so fast moving. I mean, we're going to have to develop some sort of esports course based here in Jönköping, and I'm just going, oh my God, by the time I finish developing the course, I'll have to update it before I implement it because it's so fast. There's so many different things changing and happening. It's so dynamic. My advice is develop it and put other people in charge keeping up to date, or you'll never be on it. Be like a hamster in a wheel. It's just, I think it's fantastic. I mean, so is it going to be delivered online or in person? Because
in person. You know,
it's
going to be in person. So we're in the process at the moment of... So applications are open, so students in Australia can actually apply for that now as they're getting ready to finish their schooling. But it's going to be in person. We're developing a new state-of-the-art facility for it as well. So there's going to be a special teaching space that has broadcasting capacities and streaming capacities, and it's going to have machine spaces, all fitted out properly to.
I mean, look, of course, this is when you're talking about teaching esports, you're not teaching esports necessarily. You're teaching digital skills, content creation skills to be in on the leading edge stuff, because it drives so much innovation in modern society and everything. Sure. So I love the idea that esports is not just esports. It's everything. It's marketing. It's information. It's technology. Yeah. How long does this course actually take for someone leaving school to sign up, and how long do they take part in this for?
So it's 8 months full-time, and it's 16 months part-time. So it can be done within a year, or if you're doing it part-time, you can knock it over in 2 years. And the course starts both in February and in July, so you can either come in at the beginning of the year or halfway through the year. Yeah,
that's brilliant. I love that. I mean, that's the sort of thing we need to see more of, because those aspects I'm talking about, they work really well alongside a host of degrees, because those sort of skills. There's your baby. Yes. The cats and the babies. We're getting the full Monty here. Welcome to the pandemic Zoom era.
Yeah, Zoom.
So look, this is part of the QUT, Queensland University Technology Esports Program, right? So what's that program? It's part of this big, awesome thing that will make lots of people jealous. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, right. Okay. So, I suppose the critical thing is that the QUT College actually sits independently from QUT Sport. So we actually have a number of different departments at QUT that have esports programs now. So... the QUT eSports program, which differs a little bit from the diploma in eSports, which is run by the QUT College, is actually run by QUT Sport. So it's the first program in Australia to have been officially adopted into the sports portfolio.
Awesome.
Which is great, right? So the diploma really offers an education for people who want to get into all of those supporting roles. So like you were saying, broadcasting, IT, whatever. The esports program within the sporting department is for all of those who are really interested in becoming professional esports players. So it's got a space on campus with high-end computers, with coaching. It has a coaching space associated with that, with the ability to be able to capture real-time footage and analyze real-time footage as it's happening. And we have coaching programs for grassroots kind of community coaching sessions right up through to our professional QUT Tigers team, which has a number of players on scholarships that get sports psychology assistance from professional sports psychologists, nutritionists, PTs. They're treated just like elite athletes, so they're part of the elite athlete program, so they get they get the opportunity to get into courses early to defer exams.
Yeah, we're doing something like that. I think you're just a little bit ahead of us. So, after this podcast, I've got to go deal with stuff along those lines, esports rooms and stuff like that. I mean, it's amazing. It's what we need to do. And I need to send this podcast immediately to a lot of key decision makers. Hey, you better hurry up because QUT are way ahead of us. I mean, so look, there's a thing started out of a as a startup out of the QUT Blue Box Innovation Challenge. What was that?
Yeah. So the program, I founded the program alongside Dylan Polis, who's another researcher in esports. He works in kind of stress and coping. But he and I actually did an undergrad of psychology together here at QUT, and during that process, we were super interested in exploring, you know, why was it that we were so engaged in playing video games but found it so hard to study for an exam? And
yep.
So that kind of ultimately led to, discussions around how we could harness video gaming for, you know, teaching psychological skills or helping development, which is really how we ended up in a position where we wanted to create something, a place for gamers to be able to come and get involved. And so we actually pitched the idea for an esports startup as part of a competition for $250,000. And we came away with a prize as part of that competition, and we got put through an accelerator program where we got, assistance from venture capitalists, from,
Did you get $250,000?
We didn't get the full amount. We got a portion of that money.
Nice.
So, so we got a great deal of funding that allowed us to pour a whole bunch of money into the development, and to, we were able to get paid through that process as well. So, we actually, it was awesome. It was a fantastic way to kind of kick us off. And so we went and we interviewed a whole bunch of students at QUT who are all gamers, and we found out, what the different types of gamers were, and we came across a couple of profiles that we weren't expecting. And so we used all of that information to develop this this esports program, which essentially started off as a really student-led program. And then it grew so quickly that the university then became, it was obvious to them that what we were doing was going to be successful, and that's when they got behind us, and they started the process of getting it embedded within the sporting department, which was just awesome. It was really great, and what that ultimately allowed us to do was to do things like setting up, internships with ESL. So every time ESL ran a major event, our students were doing everything from opening the doors at the event to being player managers for the international players that were being flown in from all around the world, in all the different levels of jobs. And many of them have moved on to work for ESL directly. Some of them have moved into starting their own startups in esports. It was really the esports program has been a really terrific thing. And as it's grown, it has eventually split off. And that's why now QUT Sport run just the sporting component, and that's why we have a diploma in esports. And I'm sure eventually we will have a bachelor of esports or something in that nature in the future.
In the office, people behind me, I'm sure my microphone's picking it up, but what about this startup program for disadvantaged kids? That was part of it, right? I mean, this is really cool. I love this. Tell me a bit more about what you yourself and Dylan did there, because I love stuff like this so much.
Yeah, it was really, really amazing. We put in a bid to go and speak at a conference on education, not thinking we'd get it. And we proposed to go and talk about how you could use esports to engage disadvantaged youth. And lo and behold, we got that opportunity. And so we went down and we promoted these kind of theoretical concepts that we had at the time that were around, that obviously young people are really interested in video games, particularly video games which are made by professional publishers that have got a really high engagement factor. And we said, in order to actually play these games, you need to have all of these psychological skills. And you need to know how to communicate with people and show good teamwork and control your emotions, all of these things that we want to teach kids who are, struggling. And so we met a bunch of principals down there who then, supported us and were kind of our first industry connections to go and start this program. So we went into these disadvantaged schools, and we ran a series of games where we had students play the game, and then we pulled them out, and we got them to reflect on what happened and how they were communicating, and how they dealt with their emotions. And I think the key example for me, the one that really, really stuck out, was we went to a school up on the northern coast of Australia, where the students, you know, they weren't required to go to any lessons because the school realized that it was futile to try to push them into that. And many of them had, you know, there were some of these students had bruises on their arms, or one student we saw had cigarette burns on his arms. Like these Jesus. Kids came from really sick, like really, really rough backgrounds, really rough backgrounds. And we went into the school and we got there and we took along four staff to run this program that we were expecting. We could account for about 30 students. And we got there and two kids showed up and we went, oh no, we've cooked the goose here. We've got twice as many staff as students. By the end of the session that we were there, I think we had like 40 students that had, you know, drifted in because they'd all gone and told their mates and they'd come back, and they were super, super engaged. They were all sitting and working together brilliantly. And at the end of the session, the teachers were, you know, saying, okay, how can we build this and grow this further? And so that was really exciting for us to see that, you know, esports, you know, this competitive side of video gaming can really, really be harnessed to be able to teach all of these additional skills. And realistically, that program that we had is what enabled us to win the Blue Box program. And that, you know, all of the learnings that we took from that enabled us to build and develop this esports program at QUT. And then it's because of that program that we got picked up by by Remco Polman, who's the head of the Exercise and Nutrition Sciences, when we said that we really wanted to explore the health and psychology of e-athletes at a deeper level. And because of the growth of that program and the growth of esports in high schools is what has led to the diploma in esports. So it's been this kind of trickling effect all the way through my career.
No, I love this. I mean, this is a perfect example for anyone listening who's doing their PhD or is an academic now, to actually connect with society. It's good for society, but also good for you. And I know it sounds selfish, but look, if you give back, things come back to you. And I love that you did so much good for those kids and it worked out. And that's something I really, really would love to have. So like, if anyone is interested in knowing how this happened, Michael is happy to anyone contact him. His contact details will be below the video or the stream or podcast, wherever you're listening. So Michael, just to finish off now, the last question is always, what future research would you like to see done? Anyone here sitting, watching this, looking at, oh, I want to do a thesis or I need a new research project. What needs to be done now? What do you really think is something that could be pursued?
I think from here, we really need to start exploring how health psychology and esports coaching happens in a practical sense. So the next really big studies, the ones that are really going to matter, are going to be looking at interventions. So they're going to be things like, what kind of coaching interventions work? What can we take from traditional sports coaching into esports coaching to help some of these programs grow? High school teachers, a lot of them here in Australia are in many ways, you know, some of them are learning from their students about how even the games work. So there's a lot of work there to be done in terms of understanding what best practice looks like. In terms of, you know, psychology, we need to start running some interventions to see what kind of psychological skills training programs works for e-athletes. And not just for the professionals. We want to know what this looks like for, you know, for the grassroots programs, for these schools and these kids that are coming through. You know,
definitely, that's the most important thing. To me, anyway, I think, you know, the professionals, they'll be all right. But if we can learn from the professionals and bring it down to the rest of us, I mean, that's the key. Okay, so Michael Trotter, who will be Dr. Michael Trotter, I have no doubt by the time this comes out. Thank you very much. All his contact details, and please, he'd love you to get in touch. And more information is below the video and on the eSport Research Network website. So, Michael, thank you very much for your time and telling us
about.
Thanks
so much for having me, Brian.
Okay.